This is Heidi Helfand. You're listening to the Agile Uprising podcast.
Howdy, and welcome to another episode of the Agile Uprising podcast. I am Chris Merman. They put me in charge, and they will now regret it. But I managed to corral a couple of my fellow board members. First, the keto cowboy himself, Troy Lightfoot. Troy, how are you?
Good. I'm good. I'm 22 hours into this fast, so feeling great.
We spent a few minutes laughing at Troy's fasting stories. You'll look for a future blog post on that. I can almost assure you. Also with us we have the heavily inked Andrew Leff. How are you, Andrew?
Fantastic. Thanks for asking.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Are you really thankful that I asked, or is that just like a go away thing to say?
No, I'm very thankful you asked.
All right. I'm feeling punchy, mainly just because this is a topic that we had a recent board meeting, and I threw it out on our Slack channel, and kind of everybody got excited about. So what we're going to talk about today is meetings, why they suck. And depending on how long we go, we're going to talk about what we can do about it. Mainly just because this is something that I think we can all identify with. We all feel like we know what that means when we're in a crappy meeting. Let me ask you guys, what would you describe as, like, so we can loosely, you know, what would we loosely define as a meeting? Like, in your opinions, is that any type of gathering that we have, or is it just a specialized type of group conversation?
So I think, Troy, you can go if you want, or doesn't matter.
Well, I mean, I don't know if I have a formal definition, but I guess it's like, when at least two people are getting together to talk about a subject, and usually there's some kind of outcome that's expected from that, generally.
And to me, the meeting is, I get this complaint a lot. We have too many meetings. So to me, it's a scheduled, time-boxed event that people are discussing a particular topic.
Well, it's funny that, so we even, like, right off the bat, you know, Troy's first definition is some sort of conversation with the type of outcome, right? We feel like we can agree with that, I would say, but yet, I mean, half the times, I don't know that they're really, I mean, half of the air quotes meetings that I go to don't have any type of outcome. They're just times that we, you know, we chat. It's funny, Jay Hershko in the meeting agenda, he added some thoughts, and he said all meetings are bullshit after the first 15 minutes. So in Jay's mind, a meeting is anything 15 minutes and less, because after that, then it just kind of devolves. I guess that's where the confusion comes from, maybe.
I think that's a bit extreme.
How strange for Jay Hershko to say anything that's extreme in any way, shape, or form.
And even I can be a bit extreme, but I think, you know, there can be productive meetings. You can have a productive meeting, and it doesn't have to be 15 minutes.
Right.
So I think it's, again, going back to something you said earlier, is just, what's the goal of the meeting? How do we facilitate through that meeting to achieve the goal? How do we capture questions and not feel we need to answer everything? And how do we walk away or walk out of that meeting with everyone at least either on the same page or walking away with something to do, or we know what we've accomplished during that meeting? So a lot of the times the end result of these meetings is, well, we got to schedule another meeting because we're out of time.
I always go back to my Southern Baptist roots when I just think of a meeting, and I just quote the Bible and say where two or more people are gathered together in my name. That's what a meeting is, right?
It's one way to put it.
I would not put it that way, but if you
come on, Troy. I mean, you know, I knew that would. I was trying to get a rise out of one of you with that. Because if it's just me and one person having a conversation, obviously that's not a meeting, but it's so funny. Oftentimes, maybe even some of the most successful air quotes meetings I've ever been in is when, you know, two, three, four people or, you know, or three or four people are having like a hallway conversation. And then you're like, we might be onto something here. And then you go, let's go grab a room. And then you grab a room, you sit down and start chatting. And so I don't know, but
that's a good point. How do you take that, the spirit of that discussion, and pull it into a meeting? So I feel like as soon as you have a scheduled meeting and that you get people in a room, it's like, I can't facilitate through this. Everyone's just either not paying attention, not interested, or they're just waiting for their turn to talk. Right. So
right.
There's no, like when you have that, you know, water cooler type discussion that inspires a meeting, you're all aligned to at least a common discussion, as opposed to, hey, I have a meeting on my calendar. I don't really feel like attending. I'll go because I'll get in trouble if I don't, but I'm not paying attention. I don't really care about this topic.
So I love that. I want to get back to what you said earlier about, you know, since this is technically an agile theme discussion, Troy, I'm curious, like, how do you feel about the, there's too many meetings with X framework, or too many meetings, and if they're just, they don't know what framework they're talking about, so they just say agile. Like, what do you think of when you hear that statement given by people?
Well, they're usually talking about Scrum, but if you think about it, there's only not even a handful. So you have retro, review, planning, right? So that's three. Daily Scrum, which is 15 minutes, so it's barely a meeting, if you think about it, compared to all our other meetings. So really, you got three main, and then backlog refinement, which you have really whenever you want. So really, there's three prescribed, you know, meetings, and usually people do them every 2 weeks. So you're talking about three meetings every 2 weeks. Doesn't sound like a lot. Usually what they're talking about is other meetings that management or other people pull them into, which are on top of those meetings, and they end up blaming Scrum. That's what I've seen.
Yeah, exactly. They're trying to lay whatever framework that we're trying to coach them through. They're trying to lay a framework on top of their already existing process, right, Drew?
Yeah, and I think also there's a huge, I'll speak from my own personal experiences around backlog refinement, feature refinement, actually walking through developing something without, you know, having either a blame storming session or some sort of argument about why someone else is wrong. It's literally just the adversarial environment that spins up during a meeting. And without having that strong facilitation of somebody that can either diffuse that or lead us back to why we're gathering in a room, it becomes chaos. So the whole self-managing mindset is great, but it can't be always organic, right? There's nothing wrong with a little bit of structure. And sometimes I feel that people use the agile buzzword of, you know, hey, well, we're agile. We don't need to have meetings. We don't need to plan. We don't need to have this much structure. It's not really about too much structure. It's about what goal are we achieving by having this discussion? And are we making best use of people's time?
Yeah. So I would add on to that, that facilitation is probably the most underrepresented skill and the most needed.
That's a great way to put it.
Underrepresented and most needed when it comes to making decisions on self-organizing teams, because people just don't randomly get into a room and come out with great decisions. That's usually not the way it works. You need someone with some facilitation background. And I talked about on the podcast that just recently came out about Power of a Great Scrum Master, what Jay and I were on, and we talked a little bit about this, and we talked about how facilitation is a competency that doesn't come overnight. You have to work on it. So great facilitation is needed, underrepresented, and something that needs to be worked on over and over again. And it's going to be different in different contexts. But usually that's something I see either they don't, either he doesn't have a scrum master, or if they do have a scrum master, that scrum master doesn't have experience with facilitation, has never even taken like a basic facilitation course. They don't even realize that it's like a key part of their job responsibility. And I don't know who to blame for, I don't know really who's to blame for that, but, if it's about blaming or not, but all I can say is that's a reality that I usually see.
So it's funny that you both say that, right? Cause all three of us, we coach, you know, on the program, you know, program level at, you know, wherever we get sent right now as consultants. Isn't it interesting? The people that have had professional careers for many times, and a lot of time, I mean, we talk with a lot of people in middle management. I mean, a lot of time that's most of the people I interact with is people in middle management. And I don't know how many of them I would just legit say, yes, they have decent facilitation skills. Is it just me, or is that what you all are seeing as well?
I see the same.
Yeah, I definitely see the same thing. And I just think it's not something that's focused a lot on facilitation within, you know, you kind of learn up through the ranks. And if you've watched other people poorly facilitate a meeting, how are you supposed to learn? Or if you've just never had a lot of exposure to good meetings, again, it's how are you supposed to learn this as a skill if it's never really being addressed? I mean, it's not like you go into your review as a employee and they're like, oh, well, facilitation of meetings, this is something we want to work on in your 360 or whatever review process you use. Maybe it is. It hasn't been my experience.
Go ahead, Troy.
Well, I was going to say that I believe this to my core. The CSM should have one more day, and that one more day should be dedicated to facilitation. I believe that. I think that's a big problem, is that there should be a nothing but one day where you practice facilitation techniques, you learn about convergence and divergent techniques and about different types of dysfunctions to facilitate around and these types of things, because that's such a key role of a scrum master. And when you go to take a CSM, they don't even talk about it.
So you've taken the ACI facilitator, the 2-day portion of it, right?
Yes.
Yeah. I haven't yet to knock that. I've done the coaching teams piece, but I'm guessing that you go into that in more depth during that portion.
So what's funny is that when I'm talking to like scrum masters and they'll ask me about those ACI courses, I say, you know, if you have the money, if you can get the funding, take both. If you can only take one, take the facilitator course, because that is going to be way more applicable on a daily basis. It's going to give you like very tangible things to practice, and I honestly believe that facilitation course takes people from not even knowing how to do it to at least it sets them off to where they can start down their journey of actually knowing what to practice. That, I think that's the big part, is people don't even know what to practice really. So I think that's a really good course. And that class is 2 days, but it's actually 2.5 days. It's almost 3 days. It's like nine, like day one is 9 to 8.
Jeez.
And then day two is like 9 to 5. So yeah, it's 2.5 days. And so I think if you take one of those days and add it on, you know, and maybe a shortened version, but add it onto the CSM to make it 3 days, that I think it'd be much more beneficial to people getting that CSM. I believe that.
Yeah. Facilitation is all over the description of a scrum master, and they describe the things that you're supposed to facilitate, but yet let's give some trainers the benefit of the doubt. There's probably some really good scrum trainers that do actually talk about facilitation, and they do, you know, when you do like a, you know, when you do the mock stand-ups or the mock retros that you do in the class, I would assume that there have to be at least some good trainers that sort of touch on the subject, right? But it's not part of the core material though, right?
Well, my experience with the CSM, I've co-trained it quite a few times, and I love doing it, and particularly maybe because I'm the person I was doing it with, I enjoy teaching with, but it's not needed to pass the test. And I feel like a lot of what the course has designed is to get people to pass the test, because that's how they get the cert, you know? So I feel like that's the main issue personally.
But I also think too, it's hard to, you can learn in a group setting like that, but I don't think this is something, I mean, you literally have to go through the trial and error process of how to facilitate a meeting. There's so many different personalities in the room that, yeah, you can follow a certain framework or design when you're walking through a meeting, but literally you have to know your audience. And to me, it's really helpful if not only a scrum master is, you know, if that's the person facilitating it, but the people that are in the meeting also understand the facilitation of a meeting, right? So when you get a bunch of developers that are just shooting bullets at the product owner for walking them through a refinement session, I mean, it can just be a bloodbath. So yeah, it's the spirit of why we're meeting. It's not to crush the person that's, you know, presenting or explaining something. It's what's the common goal to get us through this and in a meaningful way.
It's so funny that you say that, Drew, because I when I was earlier in my Scrum or Agile journey, I remember running these team meetings, and there was one developer that he fit kind of the more stereotypical mold of what we think of when we think of an introvert coder kind of a thing. And I used to think, I used to get so angry during the meetings. I thought it was so disrespectful that he was looking at his machine the entire time, because I thought he wasn't paying attention. I'm like, he's either playing on Facebook or he's trying to write some, you know, bullshit line of code that we don't need right now, and he's not listening I would verbally confront him during these like backlog refinement sessions and, you know, product mapping sessions or retros or whatnot. I used to get, and I think back now on just how stupid I was to act that way. And if I could find him now, I would just grab him and go, dude, I was dumb. Like there was no reason for me to treat that. Like it's a great point what you say about knowing your audience. Although I will say, Andrew, that most of the time I step into facilitation sessions where I don't know the audience. Now, obviously you can dial back your facilitation to a more generic, nondescript, I don't know you people audience. But I mean, I guess the ultimate facilitator is like, not only do I know you, I know how you will receive me depending on how I act.
Let me just clarify, know your audience real quick. It's, yes, you may not know the audience walking in, but I feel that if you have good facilitation skills or an understanding of good facilitation, you can quickly assess the individuals in the room. So you should be able to quickly assess if it's going to be a hostile discussion or if it's going to be, you know, non-engaged discussion, or just being able to flow through the room and understand the different personalities in there fairly quick. That was my point. It doesn't always have to be the people you know.
Yeah, no, great clarification. So, all right. So now, since we're on the subject of facilitation, I'll share my experience and then ask you all, but I do feel like those that are more experienced, but maybe not great, like they're experienced facilitators, but not good facilitators. My experience of that as the traditional project manager that dominates conversation, that interrupts people a lot when they're talking, that is like, we have a thing, we have an agenda, we're sticking to it, we're doing this, and they end up, and I know that when I'm not a great facilitator, I know I'm talking too much. How would you all receive that?
So can I chime in here? I would say,
please.
A facilitator isn't very much involved in the actual talking of the meeting. So a facilitator creates the container for the meeting. The people create the content. So the facilitator's job is to figure out, how do I make this meeting the most effective by creating this environment which will allow ideas to flourish and then people to converge on single idea or whatever is needed for that meeting, right? So usually facilitators will talk in the sense of they will be more like coaches, but to the team, right? Or to whoever's in the meeting. So we tend to call it like the entity. So that could be one person or can be 20 people, right? But they may use things like asking questions. They may use things like, usually it's more question. It's more bystander type of approach. That's what a good facilitator would do. In fact, there's a book I can recommend. I know we usually talk about books. So we were talking about, hey, I don't even know what I need to learn. So a book I can recommend is called A Facilitator's Guide to Participatory Decision Making by Sam Kaner. And he talks about something in there called the groan zone, which is something that I usually teach a lot. And and it's about how every meeting works. Like it basically steps you through a meeting and how a facilitator should think through it and trying to come out with decision making on self-organizing teams particularly. And the first most important thing is to understand how to get divergent thinking across all your team members. So, and part of that will be dysfunctional personalities. Okay. So not that the people are dysfunctional, but the behavior is dysfunctional. So dysfunctional behavior would be one person talking the whole time, somebody that doesn't talk at all, somebody that's on their electronics all the time and not paying attention, you know, somebody that shows up late, somebody that like you have this, basically these behaviors that persist in a lot of our meetings. And one of the jobs of a facilitator is to think through the different these dysfunctional behaviors that they are seeing. And then the next time they have a meeting, they may have to address them many ways. One, it might be, I'm going to have to facilitate this thing in such a way to drive engagement, to actually figure out how to solve these dysfunctional behaviors. Part of it might be going and coaching people one-on-one before the meeting starts, having a quick conversation, depending on the severity of the dysfunction, because you might not be able to facilitate your way around it. And then the groan zone is all that part in the middle. So once you got all your ideas out and you can do the best job at like figuring out how do I get all the different types of personalities to contribute, that's what I'm talking about when we talk about divergent thinking. Then you go into this period where you have anxiety, frustration, boredom, confusion after all the ideas are out. And then it's like, well, how do we create a shared understanding through all these divergent ideas we have to converge on one or two things, depending on what we're trying to achieve. And that takes a separate set of thinking through. So this is what I mean by it's every meeting is different and it's a competency, because I'm nowhere near, I wouldn't say I'm an expert in this, but I would say I'm competent in it and I can facilitate meetings and go through this groan zone stuff. But I wouldn't say, I don't have like a lifetime of facilitation to where I would consider myself an expert. But I know enough to be able to teach people and help people, coach people through it and stuff. So sure. Anyway, so that book I would recommend, it's, I think his name is, it's definitely Sam. It's Sam Kaner. We'll link it in the description.
Yeah. So I love what you shared, because you started going in, Troy, about your kind of, we all have our own hiccups when it comes to facilitation. So I'm just curious. I'll share first, but I'm curious to know what you because we're all wired differently, right? So I'm sure. Curious what each of your shortcomings when it comes to facilitation. I don't think it'll surprise either of you, because you all know me well enough to know this, that when I get out of sorts, I usually think I can talk my way past things, and so my struggle as a facilitator is I tend to jump in more because I'm like, no, we're supposed to be going this way. And so I try to oversteer or like overcorrect the session when we're in the midst of it. And I usually talk too much, or I'll turn it into like a teaching session when we should not even be talking about what I'm trying to teach them through. I'm like, oh, we're really struggling. Like, let me just give them a quick nugget of, hey, remember, we're doing this. And before I know it, I'm teaching them theory when we're supposed to be having like a retro kind of a thing. You know what I mean? So right. So when I get nervous, I do way too much talking. So what are some of the struggles that you all have with facilitation?
I do the same thing. If I start getting nervous for any reason, I'll start teaching.
And for me, I try and solve. So I can get bogged down in the details and try and solve the problems that are being discussed or dive way too far into solutioning that just creates a little more swirl and probably I shouldn't be solutioning because I may not know enough, right? So there's probably smarter people in the room. Right. So less about facilitation and I fall into the trap of, you know, exactly what I try and avoid in meetings or try and coach to getting away from is just that, hey, we don't need to solve all the problems here. Let's just capture all the questions if we can.
Interesting. Well, so your inner consultant comes out, I guess, so to speak, right? Because you're like, well, I'm you know, they're paying me to help them, so I like let's just get
and
right.
And sometimes
to
it's
this,
just
right?
hard to be patient. I think that's one of the
all the time.
That's another learned skill. So I mean, as coaches, it's sometimes hard to sit back and watch the accident happen, right? So it's literally allowing people to learn on their own without telling them, because I feel a lot of times going into that solution stage, you're just telling them, they're not really learning. So it's afterwards having that retrospective or inspect and adapt mentality of, hey, I want to talk to you about how the meeting went, how you feel it went after the meeting.
I find that people, when they get nervous, they do one of two things. They either bite their tongue and they don't speak up when they should be speaking up. Like I remember being in a big room planning session and the RTE literally was in the, like retreated into the corner was like in this large room. We were in a point where we needed to start putting cards up on the board and start putting some string up there and start, you know, like, let's start mapping our solution out. And he just, and I talked to him about it afterwards and he took the criticism well. He knew what he was doing, but yet he didn't know what to do. So he was like, I froze. And so I just, you know, thank God you were here, Chris, because what I do is that I get too involved as opposed to just saying like maybe. So I think that sometimes I should be willing to just sit back and let the chaos happen so that they feel this pain. And I'm like, oh, but I get too, like, I get like an overprotective parent, like, I don't want this to hurt this much. This is, they've heard enough. Let's just get to the solving thing. Would you all agree that that's one of the two reactions?
Yeah, I would agree.
Definitely.
Okay.
So Chris, and Andrew, I wanted to give one example of what I was talking about earlier to clarify, when it comes to dysfunctional behaviors in a meeting and how, and what a facilitator would do. Right. So one of a good practice would be to think through the different dysfunctional behaviors which may appear in that meeting. Especially this works if you've been in meetings with these types of people before, obviously. So there's one which we call Dominating Don, which is like, they all have little nicknames, okay? So one of them is called Dominating Don, and part of it is recognizing that the person itself is not dysfunctional, but the behavior is dysfunctional, right? So it's separating the person from the behavior. So Dominating Don, he may be dominating because he might have a strength. So his strength might be, or her, Dominating Danny could be like a female's name. That strength could be expertise. So they may be dominating because they have a lot of expertise in a certain subject matter, right? And that's a strength.
Right.
So when you're facilitating in such a way, you have to be thinking about, how do I bring in this strength of this person without allowing them to dominate, you know? So then how do you do it? So there could be a couple of ways. So one way might be like, if you're in a room with Dominating Don, you have to specifically call out people like and ask them for their input, right? So instead of letting Don talk the whole time, maybe you do that. Another way is maybe you do some kind of silent brainwriting as a as a divergent technique, right? So don't even allow people to speak to get the ideas. Another way is maybe before the meeting, I got to go have a conversation with Don about, you know, maybe it's more coaching conversation about the importance of getting others' opinions, and even though like he has all this expertise, really, you know, maybe working with him to be a little more of a coach and necessarily so much dominating. So there's millions of ways to approach it, but every dysfunctional behavior has, usually there's a strength behind that person. It's not just a matter of being dysfunction. So it's about how do we bring out the strength, and then how do we alleviate the dysfunction to drive an effective meeting? So that's stuff like a facilitator would do that has like experience facilitating and thinking through this and coaching. And that's why the Scrum Master role is great, because it's designed to be facilitation and coaching. So that's just an example. Yeah.
So I love that you did this, Troy, mainly because I found this article when we were doing research for this that was 7 symptoms of bad meetings. And I put the symptoms down, and that was actually one of the symptoms. And so maybe what we can do is, the symptoms you just described are meetings are dominated by a few talkers, right? Or not, which is not necessarily the leader, dominating Don, right? So right. This is exactly what you just referred to. So why don't we go through the other 6, and we can talk about situations we've had with them and kind of what we've experienced to kind of facilitate our way around it.
Sure.
So, I'm checking. Okay. The other one is, all right, so ramble on without a clear purpose. If there's an agenda, no one follows it, right? Mm. So in my mind, the obvious one is, well, have an agenda and then like actually stick to it. I will say that that's kind of a binary approach and is not necessarily as cut and dry as in the notes. The aforementioned Jay Hirschko said, I just decline the meeting if they're not outcomes focused and have a clear goal, like as if like we can often have that power. If I started like declining every meeting and go, well, you didn't have the outcome there. So screw you guys. Right. But, I don't know. There's 2 pieces, right? There's a clear purpose, and then there's an agenda that nobody is, or no, either no agenda or an agenda that nobody follows. So I don't know. There's kind of 2 directions we can go on this problem, but I don't know which piece of that speaks the most to you, Drew.
So agenda can be good and bad, but I think it's good to walk in knowing what you're going to talk about to at least help who's ever facilitating keep things on track. But that being said, you don't want to shut down conversation if it also could be useful. That sparks out of that agenda that may take right. you on a sharp turn, but it might be useful. But you know, I feel that sometimes we put these concepts out there like, well, you have to have an agenda and you have to have clear outcomes and blah, blah, blah. And people don't understand what that means or just do the checkbox, right? It's binary. I had an agenda. My outcome was to accomplish the meeting. Right. So
accomplish the agenda. Move all the cards from the left.
Again, it's understanding why we're meeting and are we truly getting the using best use of everyone's time and understanding what we're trying to accomplish by having a meeting.
Right.
So in your mind, Andrew, what's a good agenda? Like, cause what I feel like you're describing is enough of an agenda, but not. Yeah,
so
too much
let's
of an
take
agenda,
an example
right?
of like feature refinement. So if I have a group of folks coming in for feature refinement, we want to walk through a feature for the first time. I would expect that people review that feature prior to coming into the meeting. So there's preparation that needs to be done. So we're going in with at least we've had a first glance. And then during that meeting, the goal would be to walk through the feature, understand the business value, understand the acceptance criteria or hypothesis, whatever your definition of ready. And I'm using air quotes. I don't want to get flamed for saying definition of ready, but
Oh, I love definition of ready. I mean, it helps. Get that from me.
It helps learn.
Not me either.
Those people can suck. But those people can suck.
And saying that we're going to talk about this feature, just I'm using one feature for the time box of the hour that we're meeting. So from there, if we go shorter, great. If we go longer, then we need to make sure we're capturing all the questions from the people that couldn't attend and making sure that someone is going to follow up. So there has to be clear follow-ups after that meeting. So there will be an agenda, right? It's walk through the feature, understand the feature, get a good understanding of who's going to pick up that feature from a product owner perspective, and do they feel confident walking out of that meeting to break that feature down into stories?
So what's all right? So when is it too much? When is the agenda too much?
I think the agenda becomes too much when you're just trying. You have these open-ended, like open space discussions. That's, hey, what's the meaning of life? We want to define that in an hour. You probably could do that, but if you have 20 people in the room, you're probably going to get a big difference of opinion. So I think keeping things bite-sized and consumable within the time allotted is important.
Totally
interesting.
Agree. Yeah, totally agree.
All right, Troy, where do you come down on this problem?
Well, I usually like to coach / teach, depending on, so I guess this is more a little bit teaching, but using question-based agendas. So breaking up the meeting.
I love that.
Breaking up the meeting into different blocks, which might be time boxed, and then having a question which you yourself as a facilitator have to answer to determine why you're running that section of the meeting. And also it'll make people think. So each section would have a question, and then so that's what you'd be talking about, that question, addressing it, right?
Answering it.
Yeah. So then what you can do is you can start the meeting before the meeting starts by sending out your question-based agenda. So now when people are reading this email that you just sent out or whatever, they have a list of questions that they know are going to have to be answered in that meeting. So that gives them some prep time to think about, oh, I have to answer these questions. I have to be part of a group who's going to answer these questions. So right. What do I need to do? And, you know, it kind of like starts the meeting before it actually starts. You know, does that make sense?
I had to mute my microphone just a second to like die laughing, because when you said when people read the agenda in advance, because that's the funniest thing I've ever heard. Someone reading things before a meeting starts, that's fucking funny.
So there's something else you can do. A tip is you can write a sales pitch. So for instance, and then start the email off with the sales pitch. So it's essentially like thinking it through this way, every single person in there, why would they come to this meeting? And the sales pitch should have to be good enough to where it'll actually make them want to show up. So that means that you yourself as a facilitator have to think through the why pretty hard to know how it's going to actually benefit the attendees, and then design your meeting in a way that it will benefit the attendees. So the first sentence could be the sales pitch. So some people call it a WFM, what's in it for me, but essentially what it is a sales pitch. So you write the sales pitch, and then you have your questions, which are meant to be answered, and that's it. That's kind of what I'm suggesting. You know?
I just need to pause for a second to let our listening audience know, like every time Troy is on a podcast, like he is spitting gold. I'm just telling you, like question-based agendas, if you take nothing away from this podcast, go home and write question-based agendas. I guarantee you I will be doing that this week. I always learn something from Troy. So just, you know, just FYI, put that in the word art, Hershko, when you're making it. Question-based agendas rock, and Troy does some of the time.
Well, thank you for the compliment. I appreciate it. It's very nice of you.
Yeah, as per usual, you're just as awful at taking compliments as the rest of us, which makes you human. If you compliment Drew in anything, he just snarls at you and then and either flips you the bird or shivs you with a knife that he made from a toothbrush.
Yeah, so I'll give you. I can give you guys an example. I don't even know how to answer that, Chris. So.
Moving on.
okay. Yeah. Moving on. All right. Problem number two.
Yes.
People are doing their own thing during the meeting: texting, talking on the phone, responding to email, carrying on unrelated conversations. My favorite version of this is. You get to a portion of the conversation that someone needs to be responsible for responding to. You hear a couple of seconds of silence, and then you'll hear them say, "I'm sorry, I was multitasking. What was the question again?" Which tells me they weren't paying attention at all, and all of the preamble leading up to the portion that you needed them to respond to, you now have to go through again.
Mm, okay.
That's hurtful. To me as a facilitator, I don't know. So what is both of your takes on people doing their own thing during the meetings?
It's extremely distracting when you have people that aren't engaged. You start to second guess what you're talking about, and it's just a distraction. But I think as we go into a meeting, have we clearly laid out, for lack of a better term, the working agreement for a meeting? What's our agreement walking into this meeting, that we're here to pay attention, we're here to be present, whatever you want to call it, but it's a team sport. So we're in this meeting, it's a team sport, right? So if someone isn't doing or paying attention, we can't achieve the goal because we're not all aligned to the goal of the meeting. So I think that it's challenging to expect that without setting clear expectations. And again, it's also going through that time and time again. You have to continue to practice that and practice, and you're not always going to hit 100%, but you should still get people to invest. Cause if they're not paying attention, I've asked people just, "Hey, listen, if you got something else to do, go ahead. You don't have to be here, because it's distracting to walk through this without you paying attention." And it may not be the best thing to do is single people out, but sometimes it's frustrating.
Have you ever done that thing where you do I've been in an open space and they described the law of 2 feet. Have you ever described that in a meeting and just say, "Hey, if it seems like this meeting isn't your cup of tea, or we're talking about something that's not for you." Like,
I haven't done that, but I have done something and I wouldn't recommend it. But, I've literally just opened up my computer, sat down, and just started doing the same thing. I'm not paying attention. I'm doing something else. I'm air quoting multitasking, right? So I'm single tasking by not paying attention to why we're having the meeting. So then everyone's looking around the room like, what's going on? So it's a way to call somebody out without calling them out, maybe, but it can completely also derail the meeting. But I think it's just important that people understand what it feels like, or understands what they're observing when it's happening. So if you're not going to pay attention, what happens if I stop paying attention? And I'm the one that's supposed to be facilitating the meeting. So now it's awkward. Well, now you know. You just ate your own dog food. So,
to piggyback on that, sometimes what I'll do is I'll just say, "All right, let me know when you guys are ready." So like, if like one person's on their laptop, right, and totally not paying attention or multitasking, I'll say, "Okay, so we'll start when everyone's ready," and I'll just look at them and I won't say anything. And then usually they will self-correct.
That's strangely passive aggressive for you, Troy. You don't cross me as that type of person.
Well, there, for instance, generally we have created a working agreement first about electronics, right? So if we have a working agreement and somebody's breaking that working agreement, it's not up to me to call them out. It's up to the self-organizing team to call them out on that. They're working
agreement. Right.
So what I will do is just let them know that I will start or will continue when everyone's ready. And then I'll be really nice about it. I say, so then sometimes I'll say, "Hey, do you need a few minutes?" And then usually they say, "Oh, no. Okay." And then if they say yes, then I'll say, "Okay, we can. Would you like us to wait, or would you like to step outside?" You know, just give them the option. I do that a lot in my
meetings. So here's where I don't know. here's where I come down on the whole devices and electronics pieces. I had two experiences at a company I worked at that kind of helped shape how I view, I don't know, these kinds of doing their own thing sort of things. Is I had an architect that every morning at stand up, everybody would come in, we'd huddle around our wall, which had our Kanban board set up, and you know, we were all set to talk, and we'd all stand kind of in a semicircle around it. And what he would do is he would go and intentionally sit right in the, like he would come and sit down, right? Cause it's called a stand up. So he's thinking like, I'm going to protest like how stupid it is that we have to stand. I'm going to sit down. And he wouldn't do it like off in the corner. He would do it as a spectacle, right? Would sit down like right in the middle where everybody is sitting. And so, and everybody would kind of look to me and go, well, you're the agile dude. Like tell him he has to stand up. And I knew what he was doing. And so I just thought, no, let's play chicken and see how long that this goes. And after a week and a half of him doing that, I was like, do you feel like you've made your point? And he's like, now that you've come and talked to me about it, I feel like I have. And I'm like, well, I don't know what you're expecting to get from me, you know, as a win, right? He's like, I just think that it's weird that we have to stand. And I'm like, well, that's cool, but how much of the time are you taking, like how much extra are we making that meeting go because you're making everybody else uncomfortable that you're sitting right in the midst of where we're supposed to be standing and people are having to like walk around you to move cards and stuff. Like, so you making an example is actually making the meetings go longer. So what point do you feel like you made? And he was like, he didn't really admit that he messed up. He just kind of gave me like a nod and goes, you win, coach. And then just like walk back. And then from then on, he like stood up. The other example was, I had a VP that there was a weekly meeting that where we were kind of talking about what everything was going on in our own little worlds. And as soon as we started talking, he would pull out his phone. Right. Mm. And I thought, what are you doing, dude? But what I was noticing is that he learned later on that he actually needed to pull out a notebook and just kind of like doodle as opposed to being on his phone. But he was just on Instagram, like hearting shit. Only because he was just kind of, he was doing some sort of motor activity with his hands. But it's anytime someone said his name and was like, hey man, what do you think of this? Whatever. He would be Johnny on this. Like he would answer immediately. He knew exactly what everybody said. And then that's when I realized like, oh, so people that aren't looking at you, they may be on Facebook, like trying to watch the next video on whatever recipe they're going to make at dinner that night. Or they could just be like, you know, doing their own version of listening. So what I try to do is I try to check my ego at the door and say, oh, you're not actually, you're listening. If you show me that you're listening, I'm not going to give you shit about being on your device. Yeah. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yep. But going back to Lev's point about working agreements, that could be part of it, right? Because what you don't want is, even if that person says, oh, I'm just using it to take notes, if the perception of everyone else in the meeting is that person's checked out, if that isn't clear, then that's going to lead to ineffective, you know, communication, collaboration. Right?
Exactly. Every time I'm in a workshop or a training class, I go, hey, I know some of you may actually take notes on your computer, but studies show that you won't. So if I walk by you, it's only to see if I can call BS on you, like when you're playing on Facebook, and I make a joke out of it. And right. Usually what happens is the people that aren't really going to be taking notes, they'll put their machines up at that point in time. Okay. Problem number three, people show up who are not prepared. They haven't read the report, document, or spreadsheet. And we've kind of, you know, they have not done the research they promised to do, right? So we kind of talked about this already. So Lev, what does it look like? Like how do you, How can you tell when someone's not prepared?
They talk too much. Or they can't really drive to the point of the discussion. So they don't understand the topic that they're discussing, or when they're asked a question, they don't admit that they don't know the answer. So there's a million different ways to tell someone's not prepared. It literally is just somebody fumbling around the discussion in a really unconstructive sort of just nondescript way, sort of like what I'm doing right now when you ask me that question.
Oh my god, that's so funny. Okay. Troy, let me why don't you go, and then we'll adjourn this for part one of this, cuz this is clear we need to keep going, but you tell me what does it look like when someone's not prepared?
Well, usually they'll show up, and a lot of times they just won't participate at all because they don't want to get, they don't want to get called out for not preparing. That's something I see a lot.
It's funny. I think what we're touching on is that there's two ends of the issue. There's the I'm going to talk a lot because I have a problem, right? Same thing without a clear purpose, or people are dominating things, same things with regardless of, we're basically touching on the rest of these, like, right, starting and ending late, people leaving meetings tired, frustrating, or feeling angry, depressed. Like these are problems that people either handle by either talking a lot or they don't talk very much at all. And I feel like, and that's the part about, I think that goes back to that part that Drew, you mentioned about knowing your audience, even if you don't know them going in, is being able to spot this person's talking a lot, like more than feels normal. And regardless of how experienced I am, like I should be able to at least see that, right?
Yeah.
This person is talking a lot, or this person is not saying anything.
I know
anything,
Troy
had
something he wanted to chime in with as well. I just wanted to say something that I've done that has helped in certain situations where I'll be extremely transparent by saying, you know what, I'm not really prepared to have this discussion today, but if we still want to have it, we'll walk through it. But just know I may not have, be fully prepared as much as everyone thinks. Or saying, hey, listen, I am double booked today, so I'm going to attend this meeting, but I also have to pay attention to my computer because I'm waiting for something, right? So it's setting that expectation up soon, like right at the beginning, that can help people be a little more honest in a meeting, as opposed to just, feeling like, hey, I got to do so many things. This is the last thing I feel like being at. So I'm just going to not pay attention at all. So I think you could also just be the completely transparent or take the complete transparent approach too, and see how that can help lead to some of the more meaningful discussion.
Yeah, I like that answer. Good answer.
Yeah, it was a good answer. Troy, where were you headed?
I was gonna, before we wrap for this part one, I was gonna give one example. I'm gonna tie back some of the things I talked about through this and give an example. So a few months back, maybe in March, I was asked to facilitate a meeting between Scrum Masters and managers. And this is the sales pitch I came up with, right? One of the most difficult parts of an Agile transformation is understanding how to work together with new roles and new ways of working in your current roles. This will be the kickoff to going through this transformation together. So basically what I did was I just sent that out, right? And then I sent out the question-based agenda that I created. So when they first see it, it's kind of like I'm empathizing with them when they first read it, right? Like one of the most difficult parts is really understanding your role and how to work with people in these new roles, which is, they'll probably read that and say, yeah, that is true. Okay, well, this is going to kick off you guys working together. So the idea is that we're trying to get buy-in, like from that first initial reading of that, if they read the email, of course, right? And then I ended up creating this question-based agenda. So the purpose for this meeting was to, that I came up with, was to create better working relationships between Scrum Masters and managers by, and there's like three things I listed, beginning to build trust, understanding, and empathy, those three things. So when I was constructing the meeting and how to facilitate it, I had those three things, trust, understanding, and empathy. So the way I facilitated it was such a way to drive those three outcomes, right? In this particular case. So what I mean is it takes a really good amount of prep work to think through all this stuff and then think through the room. If it's remote, the remote people, what are the techniques I'm going to use to get these three outcomes I'm trying to drive? All these things. I mean, I'm not saying it was the greatest meeting in the world, but I can tell you that it went pretty well. And we actually got, like, it really was the kickoff to more conversations. And I can tell you that after that, there really was a better understanding of what each other's doing. And they started to kind of build some, they started to see it from the other people's perspective. And that's all I was really trying to get out of that particular meeting. But that gives an example of like that sales pitch I was talking about, you know?
Yeah.
Like, if someone's going to show up, why do they need to, why would they,
right, but what's something going to make them said,
want to show up?
That's something you said, Troy, I think is important. Just something you just resonated with me is the person that's hosting the meeting or having the meeting, are they preparing it to a certain degree where you walk into that meeting and you're really prepared? So it sets the precedence that, hey, I'm investing the time to prepare for the meeting. If no one else is investing the time to have the meeting, you can call that out. Like, you can use these as retrospective items of saying, I spent a lot of time preparing for these meetings. If you guys aren't finding them meaningful, why? Let's start changing things and understand how to make our meetings more meaningful. Right. I think that's an important thing you stated.
I mean, the bravery to cancel something that is not effective or maybe even reboot.
Help me make it better.
That might be the sign of a good leader. Yeah, help me make it better.
Josh.
Okay. All right, gang. We are an hour in, and we have barely even scratched the surface on this. So we're going to adjourn for now and come back for at least a part two. We'll see how many. Clearly, this is a topic that we have some words to share on. So. So Troy, if people want to ask more about your question-based agenda, where do they find you?
Best place to be would be Coalition. So it's coalition.agileuprising.com. It's free. You can communicate with any of us there. And feel free. That would be a great place to start.
Look at you being a company man. Drew, if other people want to talk about other people's passive aggressiveness.
You can find me on the Coalition as well and always on Twitter at leanleft or at leanleft.
At lean left. He always right. Leans to the left, never to the right. myself, I am at Chris Merman on Twitter. I'm addicted to that stupid app. Let's talk about meeting some more. I can guarantee you we're coming back for at least a part two on how we can maybe make a better meeting. So for Troy, Drew, and myself, thank you all for attending, and we will check you next time.